Cassetti with a wasteful ball. He's given it straight to Andy Reid. Mackey. Andy Reid! A special goal from a special footballer. Andy Reid blasts Nottingham Forest in front.
It was actually a little bit daunting, you know, just kind of first day at school again, kind of. But no, it was good, the trip to Tenerife, to sort of get to know the players and stuff and kind of end at the deep end, which was good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, you know. It was a while trying to get it done and, you know, managed to sign the contract and get in here, you know. I'm looking forward to meeting up with the lads and getting into training and, you know, working under what seems to be a great manager.
Irish football takes a new turn as 2014 is well underway. Players have moved left, right and centre while Serbia beckons for the boys in green. This is the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. We're going to be talking about Martin O'Neill's first Irish squad of the year and who we think will make the cut. Is Stephen Ireland set to make his long-awaited return? The Why Big Forum recently had a poll on how Irish fans would feel about the Cork man's return, and it was almost deadlocked. Irish fans just about in favour of the return of Stephen Ireland. Wes Houlihan has been at loggerheads with Chris Hughton and Norwich recently, and we asked the question, will this affect his place in the Irish squad? While the League of Ireland is shaping up nicely with some tasty pre-season clashes, we'll be looking ahead to the season as domestic soccer hopes to take a giant leap into success. If you want to contact the show, you can do so. You can mail me. It's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also at talkingsport.org on Twitter and facebook.com/talkingsport.org. Well, it's a small show to kick things off in 2014. Not many people are talking about the boys in green, but a lot of players have been on the move. I'm delighted to be joined by Joe McCarthy from the Irish Abroad website. He's been tracking players moving left, right and centre, as I was saying. Joe, a very happy new year to you. We're getting ready for the Serbia clash. The big announcement is happening in your home city of Limerick on the 20th of February. Martin O'Neill names his first squad of the year to take on Serbia in a friendly at Aviva Stadium in March. It's an exciting time for the boys in green. I guess the squad selection, it's all up in the air, really.
Hi, Dave. It's good to be talking to you again, and belated happy new year to you too. I think it's obviously it's a very exciting time, as you say. It's going to be Martin and Roy's first squad they played together. You know, the last squad was left to them really by Noel King. So they've been spending the interim few months attending as many games as they can with a view to seeing what players, seeing how the existing squad is doing really, and if there's any players that might have been missed by the previous management and that could be possibly be promoted. I think Serbia are going to give us a tough game at home in a couple of weeks. Looking forward to the squad announcement in Limerick now next week. And there's a Q&A with Martin O'Neill on that night actually in Thomond Park. I'd encourage anyone who's around the area to try and get down. They're selling tickets for it on Limerick FC's website. It'll be a fairly unique opportunity, I think, to get up close and personal with the Irish management team. You know, on the same day that a squad is announced, which rarely happens outside of Dublin. And you know, I think maybe even you'll get some questions in about the players that have been added to the squad, players that have been missed out, and what their plans for the future are.
Some of the main talking points regarding the squad announcement, Joe, was in the fact that a lot of people are suggesting he'll leave Robbie Keane out because it's a friendly, we don't need him. Richard Dunn perhaps can be left back home with QPR. A lot of the senior players maybe not getting called up for this one, and a lot of the younger players coming in, the likes of Eunan O'Kane, who had a fantastic match for Bournemouth against Liverpool in the Cup. A couple of other lads, maybe, I don't know, Jack Grealish, is that a step too far? There's a lot of Irish fans talking about it. Who would you like to see in the squad?
I think just to start off with the Robbie Keane thing, I think he will be left out. I don't think there's much point in bringing him over for a friendly. He's still very much in pre-season with LA Galaxy at the moment. And I think their first game isn't too long after the Serbia friendly. So to fly him over just for a friendly and then fly back again to LA, it might be asking a little bit too much of him. Maybe not to the same length with Richard Dunn. I mean, we're very familiar with what he can do. He's been playing very well for QPR during the upper echelons of the championship at the moment. They're looking good for at least a playoff position. And again, like, it might give someone else an opportunity to stake a place in the squad, if not to start in 11 for the upcoming qualifiers. There was just a report today, I just saw it online, that Roy Keane was supposed to be impressed, very impressed with Willow Flood of Aberdeen at the weekend against Celtic, when they knocked the boys out of the Scottish Cup, despite going, you know, one down at Celtic Park.
Adam Rooney in action in that one as well.
Yeah, Adam Rooney, after moving north of the border for a second spell after playing there before. I think, you know, you mentioned Jack Grealish. Impressing a lot in what's an improving Notts County side. He's initially only went there for, a 2-month loan and returned for one game in the FA Youth Cup at Villa and then went back to Notts County until the end of the season. Seems to be in the middle of anything good that's been happening at Notts County.
You know, things are going good when people are recording putting together sexy video packages of your skills and that kind of thing. He's also prone to a couple of rash challenges. A lot of teams in League One seem to be targeting him.
Well, I think that's a testament to, you know, how well he plays. You know, he's obviously been picked out as the danger man. He's very comfortable on the ball from what I've seen. A lot of people have compared him to Cristiano Ronaldo, which I think is a little unfair on him at such a young age. I don't think he's quite the same kind of power that Ronaldo has in his play. But just from what I've seen, and I know this is almost as bad, he seems to play a little like George Best does. He tends to glide past players in possession of the ball. He's obviously very comfortable in the ball. He's not afraid of shooting. He has an eye for a pass as well. I hope to see him in the green jersey for the senior team in the not too distant future. Whether or not he gets called up for the game in March, it's a big jump from the lower echelons of League One to international football. It might come a little too early for him, but I definitely think he's one to watch for the future.
The huge talking point, Joe, it's all over the Why Big forum, is of course the potential return of the prodigal son from Cork, Stephen Ireland. 7 years ago, or it wasn't quite 7 years ago, 2007 I should say, was the last time he played for us. He left under very bizarre circumstances. There's been a lot of crazy things written in the papers, a lot of willy won't he kind of mumbo jumbo. As far as I understand, Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane have not sat down and met with him, something that Stephen Ireland had indicated through the media that he wanted to happen. He wanted to have a sit down and discuss things. What do you make of this whole thing? As I mentioned, the Why Big forum, they ran a poll on it recently and Irish fans are pretty much deadlocked on whether they'd like him to see him return. And I think that's not so much down to what's happened in the past. I think that's more down to his actual form at the moment. He's been in and out of the Stoke City side.
Yeah, that's true. I think when he played his best football under Mark Hughes at Man City, and there was hope that after he left Villa to go to Stoke, initially on loan and then on a permanent deal, that he would start to replicate that form. But unfortunately, he does seem to be starting on the bench more than, lining out in the starting 11. And he hasn't been scoring as much as he did at Man City under Hughes as well. I think what Ireland would bring to the side is that he's a very different player through the middle of the park than what we have at the moment. James McCarthy, Glenn Whelan, Keith Andrews, even Darragh Gibson to a certain extent, don't have the same kind of creativity in the middle of the park that he does. And certainly I don't think they have the same kind of eye for goal. In the short few games that he did play under Staunton, he found the back of the net in quite a large amount of them. I think it was 4 goals in 6 games. I think that would be a welcome return to see, some more of the goals being shared around the team, especially in midfield. I was undecided at the time, when he first decided to exile himself from the Ireland setup, whether or not I wanted him back. And to a large extent, I am still very much in that mindset. It's gone on, as you say, for the better part of 7 years now. There's been a lot of water under the bridge. There's been, two changes in management.
A lot of well-known pundits, Joe, are coming out saying that Stephen Ireland, if he was to return to the Irish team, he would derail the morale in the squad. Is that not just a bit harsh? I mean, how are we to know what's going to happen inside the squad? And to put a point to you, Stephen Ireland will admit it himself, he's friends with half the team.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the players that have established themselves in the senior setup now are lads that he would have been familiar with, you know, from the underage setup, you know, and as well as that, you know, at Stoke, you won the largest collection of Irish players in the Premier League. You know, Ken Whelan and John De Walters and Mark Wilson are all regulars in the Stoke team and have been for some time now. You know, if he were to come back, you know, they'd be the familiar faces in the dressing room. You know, we've all seen players, you know, not even with Ireland, with club size, we've seen players come back from, you know, from Seven Post Exile, from, you could call them personal incidents outside of football, and been returned back into the dressing room and hasn't caused that much of an uproar. It could possibly be hyperbole from the media to say that, you know, the return of the prodigal son will cause a massive upheaval. And I don't really think so. I mean, these are professionals. If the manager said this player's in the squad, then, you know, you accept that the player's in the squad and you get on with it. If you don't like it, then there's probably a whole lot of players waiting to replace you.
And there's a little bit of a difference there, Joe, as well, because Stephen Ireland wouldn't be a case where our best player is coming back into the team like we had the return of Roy Keane back under Brian Kerr. I mean, it's probably fair to say Stephen Ireland would be far from Ireland's best player at this stage.
Oh, no, and I wouldn't suggest that he would be the best player, but like I said, he would bring something to the squad that, you know, perhaps is missing at the moment, that little bit of creativity through the middle of the park. I don't think he'll be in the Serbia squad, but I think it would be nice to see him perhaps before the qualifiers begin in September. To be brought back into the setup.
Yeah, indeed, a couple of interesting friendlies coming up as well. We'll be talking about that a little later on. Players, green players on the move, left, right, and centre. Let's start about a long Shane Long. He's been moved to Hull. A move that should have actually taken place at the start of the season. As far as I know, a deal was supposed to be done, but it's taken up to now. He got in the transfer window. Steve Bruce brought him in. He's linked up with Jelavic quite well. It's very positive to see. We need a striker like Shane Long scoring goals regularly in the Premier League.
Yeah, he was originally supposed to be moved there in the transfer window in September. You know, he was with the Ireland squad, and I think even had boarded a private plane to fly to England, but unfortunately the deal was scuppered before it went through, before the transfer window slammed shut as it does, and then the move was reignited again in January. I think what's going on at Hull at the moment is that Steve Bruce has kind of recognised that, you know, he was promoted with and sort of an above average championship side, and he's slowly bringing in Premier League quality players, and among them is Shane Long. He's hit the ground running at Hull. As you say, he's linked up well with Jelavic, who scored his first goal in nearly a year, I think, at Premier League level. Shane Long has found a net for Hull City, which obviously helps any striker to settle into a new side. Hull, I think, will stay up comfortably this season. I think Shannon and Jelavic will be their strike partnership for the rest of the season. And, you know, we hope to see him. We know he has the talent, but he can be a little inconsistent. And I think that's what Bruce needs to get out of him, is that consistency at finding the back of the net.
Hopefully there'll be much more goals for Shane Long. Two terrific goals he scored against my team, Aston Villa, earlier in the season, which was a little bit of a bittersweet feeling for me, but I got over it because it was Shane Long. Speedy McGeady, he's gone to Everton. He needed to get out of Moscow, Joe, and he has got out of Moscow. He was due to start tonight for Everton against Crystal Palace, but it just wasn't to be, as the weather ruled roost. McGeady, a very good move from linking up with the likes of James McCarthy and Seamus Coleman, Darren Gibson as well. Will McGeady, a lot of Irish fans are a little bit concerned, will he start many games or could he just be left on the bench? But I think Martinez has a little bit of a faith in him.
I think Martinez does see something in him as well. And I think the way he's improved the Everton side after taking over from David Moyes is testament to that. He seems to be a lot more of a footballing side than he'd been previously. It's just unfortunate tonight. He was supposed to be starting on the right wing with Coleman behind him, which would have been an interesting link up, both from an Everton fans' point of view and from an Irish point of view, because that could be the same sort of right hand side partnership we see for the next few years for the boys in green. I think he'll complement Coleman very well. What a lot of people tend to forget about McGeady is that he's actually quite defensively disciplined. You know, if we go back to the performance in Moscow, everyone always remembers Richard Dunn. But a lot of people tend to leave out, you know, McGeady was tracking back the whole time. He was covering for Stephen Ward in that left fullback slot. You know, and he provided an out ball for the defense as well. You know, he's always been very good with the ball at his feet. I know some people say that his end product can sometimes be lacking, but you know, I did some research for an infographic of Trapattoni's reign, and he was by far the most consistent creator of goals. You know, with I think he finished with 10 assists under Trapattoni.
Yeah, and really got us to the Euros. It has to be said, a lot of fantastic goals, and I think under Martin O'Neill, hopefully it'll improve on that. We'll be right back on the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. Chat to you soon. If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on TalkingSport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. Yes, you're very welcome back to the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. We were talking a little bit about Aidan McGeady and Shane Long there. We have a real treat for you now. We're delighted to be joined by Norwich City fan and fantastic media man, it's probably fair to say, John Rogers. John, thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. What brought me to your attention was that fantastic video that you made, a little bit of a tribute to Wes Houlihan, a player who has served Norwich City very well over the past few years. But it highlighted how good of a player he was. But at the same time, John, it highlighted his bench frustration at Norwich City. And I think what you did in the song was you probably showed off a lot of Norwich City fans' frustration. It's a terrific song. No doubt you're a little bit disappointed that we haven't seen more of him this season.
Well, actually, I wrote the song about 18 months, 2 years ago, because I used to do a podcast, and at the end of each podcast I used to kind of play like a silly song, and that was one of them. So it's been going on for a while now, and I kind of updated it and put it onto YouTube. A lot of people are getting more and more frustrated, as you said, with Wes not being kind of the main man, which he was when he, you know, for quite a long time. So yeah, I think that's where it came from, the song, just being that him constantly sitting on the bench when he can change games in an instant, but we're not really in
there's a very nice little cartoon that you have in the song where you say football plus a brain equals Wes Houlihan, and then you have also a little Subutio board, and you have a little figure kind of moving around highlighting how mobile he is. Of course, from an Irish point of view, we felt frustrated as well over the past few years with Giovanni Trapattoni not playing Wes Houlihan, but at his time at Norwich City he's been so mobile and a real creator, and probably one of the main driving forces, it's fair to say, John, in you guys getting to the Premier League and staying there.
Definitely. I did have a lyric in the song that was a rude remark towards Trapattoni, but I took that out because I think it was a bit too... what's the word?
What did it say?
I can't say it. I can't say that. Possibly you'll get taken off the air.
Okay.
But yeah, but when he was actually signed a long time ago by Glenn Roeder. And when you ask any Norwich fan, that's probably the best thing Glenn Roeder ever did for us. I think the second best thing that Glenn Roeder ever did for us was turn up to the meeting that got him sacked. He's been a great player for us. He's, you know, with lots of goals, he assists a lot. He ran the show for a long time, and we've put him in the Hall of Fame as well. Especially when we dropped down to League One, I think Paul Lambert got him fitter than he's ever been, and he's shone. He was just an incredible player in that league. But I will say, as we've kind of gone up to the Premier, he like dragged us up with, you know, a lot with Grant Holt, etc. When we got back to the Premier, he wasn't the force that he was in League One and in the Championship, naturally, because there's more skillful players, a lot more stronger players, and you're just kind of getting brushed off the ball a bit too much. And I can see why Chris Hughton has kept him on the bench for some games. But when you need that little bit of spark, a little bit of extra, and we wanted him to play for Ireland a lot more. And the Norwich fans, we used to get frustrated with Trapattoni, and he just, that little spark that he can bring into a game is what we've been missing out this season, definitely, because dropping like a stone at the moment.
I remember he joined from Blackpool a couple of years ago, and everybody was putting it to him, the fact that, Wes, you're dropping down a division, but what he always said was he was dropping down a division for the fact that he believed Norwich were a bigger club and Norwich would allow him to further his ambitions, which really turned out to be right, because Blackpool went up and went straight back down in the Premier League. Has it been very frustrating watching such a great servant to Norwich come to loggerheads with manager Chris Hughton, another Irish man? For Irish fans, I know it's been very frustrating watching this happen. And then there was talk of speculation of comments being said off the pitch and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's very it's bad for morale, I suppose, seeing this kind of thing happen.
I guess with every single football club, but because I'm a Norwich fan, I see it a bit more regularly. But we've had so many legends in the last kind of 5 or 10 or 15 years, like Ewan Roberts and Darren Eady and Dion Dobbin, and especially Darren Huckabee. They've all kind of stayed quite local within Norfolk, and they've grown up and actually started to support Norwich as well. And any of them could like kind of walk into a bar and get paid their drinks paid all night for them. I mean, they're that kind of legend. And Grant Holt was one of them. Unfortunately, he put a transfer request, and he's kind of, people have dropped him out of their hearts. And the same thing is kind of with Wes Houlihan now, unfortunately. When he put that, he only actually signed a new contract about 12 months ago to keep him until 2015. And when he put the transfer request in, it bittered people's opinions of him, I think, especially mine, because he was such a legend for us. He has been there for quite a long time. And putting a transfer request in is always such a disappointing thing for such a legend to do. But he had to do what he did, and him swearing about the club as well wasn't the greatest thing. But that's one of the troubles of Twitter, I guess. You say something off the record and it's spread across the internet in seconds.
Quite disappointing. Another Irish player at Norwich who has been doing well but very unlucky through injuries, it has been Anthony Pilkington. We've been very excited about him playing for Ireland, and it always seemed to be the case where he'd always get an awful knock or a 6-month layoff tackle the week before an international match. So we were unlucky in that regards. But he's been another player that has seemed to really rose to the occasion in the big matches. He scored some fantastic goals.
Well, he broke his leg at Huddersfield, and I don't think he's ever properly recovered from that. He had a real proper break, his leg was pointing the wrong way type break. He's an interesting player, Pilks. He's not particularly pacey, he's not particularly aggressive, but he's not actually very good in the air, apart from that great goal he scored against Man United. But he's got, as you said, he's got a real knack for scoring some brilliant goals. And he always used to get, especially the last two seasons he's been in the Premiership, about 8 to 10 goals a season without particularly shining too much. He always put him on the pitch, and he'll definitely get you a winning goal. So, yeah, I think he would do a good job for Ireland. I think he's the sort of player who is steady, puts good crosses into the box, and I think he'd get you a goal out of nothing. He does that a lot.
Yeah, Joe, that's a fair point that John is making there. If we were to have a player like Pilkington playing, you know, we've always wanted midfielders in the Irish team that can actually score goals. We've seen Pilkington scored some terrific goals for Norwich City, including that header that John was saying against Man United. It really came out of nowhere. It was fantastic. A player like that is so crucial because, as you were saying earlier in the programme, Joe, we are lacking goals from the midfield area.
I think it's something that's, I think, under the previous management, I think they recognised that, you know, Robbie Keane was, you know, probably our greatest threat. And I think a lot of the setup of the team was to take advantage of that. And I think that's, you know, it's not an unfair assumption to make. He did score a ridiculous amount of goals for Trapattoni. I think it was something like one in every two games. But obviously, like, as he's coming to the end of his career, we're going to have to start looking for other sources of goals. And you know, I think the midfield is one that needs to put the players need to put their hands up and be recognised as a threat and as a possible source of game winning scores.
And Joe, what John was saying about Wes Houlihan and the, you know, the loggerheads that he was at with Chris Hughton, and to see his frustration and handing in a transfer request, it's sad to see, because I think it's very important from an Irish point of view that he is playing week in, week out, and to see him sitting on the bench every week, it's not exactly going to give Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane the chance to see him and see what he can do.
Yeah, I think I was a little disappointed to see him hand in the transfer request as well, that at Norwich. I think he's you know, obviously his career has flourished there over the last few seasons, but it just seems to have gotten to the point where he can't get into the team at the moment. And obviously Lambert thought he could bring something to the Villa team that isn't there. But for whatever reasons, the transfer, the approaches were rebuffed by the powers that be at Norwich. And it just came to the situation where he had to hand in a transfer request, and even that was turned down. I was actually a bit surprised when I heard the comments that he made as well about the club. You know, he's never really struck me as one to be outspoken, or, you know, to even use language like that, to be honest. But I think it was just frustration with the way things have worked out there. I think what it comes down to is that he just wants to play football. It doesn't look like it's going to happen at Norwich City in the near future. And Villa had obviously given, or were trying to give him the opportunity. And just, as I say, just frustrated with the way that it worked out.
Yeah, West Brom as well coming in from at the last moment. John, to come back to yourself and just about the Premier League and small, skillful players that you were saying, that you made the point that maybe it was the case that he wasn't physical enough. And we see how difficult it can be in the Premier League, because a lot of people will say the Premier League is based on strength and speed. Do you think a player like Wes Hoolahan, it's very hard for them in the top tier of English football?
He's lost his pace a little bit, especially ever since the League One days. He was Paul Lambert got him really fit. Can I just make a point about, I think with Aston Villa, they offered £750,000 for him. Now, he's in his contract, and that is, when you've got players like Andy Carroll getting bought for £30 million, I think if they'd offered a little bit more money, I think he would have gone to Aston Villa, I really do. If they'd have offered, say, £2 million, £3 million, I think he would have gone.
You see, because all the rumours were, John, that they were that Norwich didn't want to sell him to Lambert.
Yeah, but there's a lot of kind of history between our chief executive and Paul Lambert. He walked out and words were said, etc., etc. But I still think, and a lot of the fans think, if they'd have given him a better... because it was a bit of a Mickey take, to be honest. You know how much money. It's not even £1 million for one that, you know, one of the most skillful players in our squad. I know he's getting on a bit. He's 31, but he's still got 2 years left on his contract. I mean, I do think if they offered a bit more money, he would have gone.
And John, what would be your hopes now for Wes going forward for Norwich? Do you think it is going to be, as your song says, at Aston Villa is a joke, at Norwich at Hull, the both of the Manchesters too? It's going to be continuous bench frustration.
That just rhymes with Stoke. That's all I've got. he's been on the bench. Ironically, he's been on the bench the last couple of games. He wasn't in the squad for about two or three games during the last week of the transfer list or transfer window closing, and a week after. But he's back. He was back on the bench last night when we lost to West Ham. A lot of players were calling for him to come on again. A lot of fans were asking him to come on, but it was West Ham, a very physical side. I don't think he would have made much of a difference. I don't think it's the end for him. I really don't. I think he might get a game in the next few. In the next few weeks, I think he might come on and do something, and he'll get behind, and he'll, you know, make peace with the fans, and hopefully with Houghton. Houghton said all the way along, this isn't the end for Wes Hoolahan, but he's. He hasn't played for a while now, and it's getting towards the point where maybe he was just kind of putting him on the bench as a punishment, maybe. Or he just loves my song, I don't know.
I know, I agree. What about Chris Houghton, John? What's Norwich fans towards his performance? Of course, he came in after being really kind of harshly dumped by Newcastle, it's probably fair to say, but he had done a pretty good job there last season. It's been a bit of a struggle this season. How do you see Houghton, how it's going? He's not going to be the next manager sacked, is he?
I think he would have been sacked. Basically, Norwich fans hate him, I'm not going to lie. There's a real divide between, either we call them inners and outers, and it's either you're a strong inner or you're a strong outer. And there's no kind of like grey in the middle. I'm actually in the grey middle thing. I don't agree with what most things he's doing at the moment. It's quite frustrating of what the sort of play we're doing. So I don't know if anyone saw the game or the highlights for the Norwich and West Ham game. But we battered West Ham. We had four brilliant chances. Didn't score. They had a set piece, scored, and they broke to get 2-0 towards the end on a counter-attack. It's just a lot of the Norwich fans think he's too negative. I think he's just a defensive manager. So there's a difference between being negative and defensive, I think. But I don't think there's a big majority of Norwich fans who will never get to like him, because he's not Lambert. We had this massive rise with Lambert. Went from the bottom of the league, of League One, after losing 7-1 the first game, and went flying, literally. We didn't stop winning, didn't stop scoring goals. If we were losing 1-0, he'd put defenders up and put three attackers on. There'd be seven up front and we'd get a draw, etc. Chris Houghton's not like that. He plays, he knows, his mentality is, if you keep a clean sheet, you get a point. If you score three goals, you might lose 4-3 and not get any points. And the Norwich fans don't really like that. They want to go, they want entertaining, they want goals, they want action. But Chris Hughton isn't getting that, and I don't think he's ever going to turn some fans around, unfortunately.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens on that regard. Just before we let you go, John, there's discussions in Irish circles about the eligibility of, I think, Nathan Redmond to represent Ireland. A lot of Irish fans are saying that Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane should maybe talk to him, see if he'd be interested in playing for Ireland or that. What can you tell us about him? He seems quite sharp at times. How has he been this season?
He's very, very tricky, very fast, can use both feet, but his final ball's lacking. And he's only 19 now. People forget he's only 19, just turned 19, and he's still very raw. But once he's on song, I don't know if you saw the Man City game, but he turned Vincent Kompany inside out at one point. That's how the skills he's got. But then he got past him and put a cross in that went straight out of play. So he's that sort of player at the moment. I see a lot of potential in him. I really do. And I'd love to see him play to go on for England. But whether he will, I can't remember the last. I think John Ruddy is the only Norwich English player we've ever had in the last few years represent England. So I don't think we're a very England-heavy representation, unfortunately. But I think, he's got a lot of skill, very fast. He kind of explodes out of nothing. He likes to hold the play up, then break away and put crosses in. But that final ball, if he can work on that, if he can start producing goals as well, I think he'd be a really good player for someone. We got him from a snip. I think we got him for like 2 million, 3 million quid. And that's a snip for, you know, the amount of potential he's got.
Yeah, absolutely. Get him from Birmingham City. It's and he's represented England at under 16, under 17, under 18, under 19, under 21 as well. And Joe, is it a little bit rich us hoping to poach him really from the English setup?
Quite possibly, yeah. I think just going on John's description there, you know, he does seem to sound
very like very Aidan McGeady.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He does sound, a lot of people would describe Aidan McGeady. Very tricky with a lot of potential, but sometimes it can be a shame about his end product. I'm always very undecided about, you know, approaching these players, whether or not to change allegiance to the Irish international side. I think if they can bring something that the side is currently lacking, and that they're willing to play for Ireland, and by all means, I don't really like seeing, you know, hats, caps been handed out, you know, just for the sake of handing out a cap. Like John says, you know, Redmond has a lot of potential, but he has played for England, you know, a lot of the underage teams all the way up. You know, having said that, you know, Kieran Clark captained the England under 19 setup and very much established as an Irish international now. I guess it's, you know, we have to trust the management's decision and see what they do in the next few months.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's great to see there is a good Irish interest in Norwich there. John, just before I let you go, I know your Twitter handle is @BigGrantHolt. Is there any way that a lot of the Irish fans can actually see some of these terrific videos that you've made? I know you've made a couple of videos about different players. Do you have a YouTube channel or anything like that?
Yes, it's a BGH podcast. I mean, that was what I said when I was doing the podcast. That's where it came from. But yeah, just search for, you know, Big Grant Holt on YouTube. There's lots on there.
Fantastic stuff. Well, listen, John, thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. We hope that Wes makes up with Chris and Pilkington shines, and we have a huge Irish emergence at Norwich City, and hopefully you guys will be okay for the rest of the season.
I'll keep your fingers crossed. Thanks for having me on, guys.
If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. You're listening to the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. We were talking to John Rogers, Norwich City fan, all about Wes Houlihan and Anthony Pilkington and potentially Nathan Redmond, who has played for England right up through to almost senior level. So that remains to be seen. We're delighted to be joined by Pogue McGoals, James Carew. James, thanks for joining us on the programme. I know it's a very windy, you're over in the UK, a lot of matches have been postponed tonight, but thanks for taking the time to talk to us about Irish soccer. Lads, I want to first start with Andy Reid's form, because we've seen him being unbelievable for Nottingham Forest this season. We spoke about him at quite at length on last year's programmes, but this year we've really seen Andy Reid at the centre of everything good about Nottingham Forest. James, you've always been a fan of him. It was his weight that seemed to be the problem in the past, where he couldn't get around the pitch quick enough, but he seems to be in great shape. He's the captain. Surely, if he's central to a very good Nottingham Forest team, he can play a serious role in the Irish team.
Yeah, you'd have to. And Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane have been to watch Nottingham Forest quite a few times now. So you'd have to think, if they're serious about having a kind of creative style of play, Andy Reid would have to be one of the first named on the team sheet. In the past, he's gone up and down both in form and weight, it has to be said about Andy, unfortunately. But, you know, we've had been before where he'd slimmed down and people were calling for his inclusion, but and Trapattoni ignored him, really brought him back. But right now, you'd have to say he's playing possibly as good as he ever has, and he'd have to be a search to be in the squad.
Yeah, Joe, would you go along with that? Probably one of the first names on the Irish squad. He plays in that kind of advanced central area. Maybe he's given a free role, but he has a lot of responsibility at Forest now that he's captain, and he seems to be grabbing it with both hands and potentially driving them back to the Premier League. It's great to have an Irish player playing such a key role at any club.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, Forest is where he started out, or he first got his broke into like the kind of the public imagination as a player. And I think he's, you know, he had a fairly, you know, I suppose mixed career, you know, around the different grounds before he finally returned to Forest. And I think he's really driven on from that. You know, the last couple of seasons I've seen him, you know, he's taken his fitness a lot more seriously. He's playing some absolutely fantastic football with some truly absolutely unbelievable passes and assists. And I think he got one, you know, just quite recently. The outside of his left boot to the far post, without, you know, just a one look. It was, you know, if it was a Pirlo or someone who'd done the same thing, we'd all be crying about it. I think he was brought back into the team under Noel King, and you know, he would have continued. You'd have to imagine he's going to continue under Martin O'Neill and Roy King. I think the other thing, what's happened as well, as far as that, you know, he seems to be playing very well with Simon Cox. You know, he's getting a lot of setting releasing Simon Cox for a lot of the goals that he scored recently. And obviously that's another positive for the Ireland team.
Yeah, James, Simon Cox, a player that we spoke about a lot before on the programme. Our frustration was vented that he kept being played as a winger for Ireland when we said he's a striker. We've seen him striking for Nottingham Forest this year. It's good to see for Simon.
It's definitely good to see a player on form and a forward player on form, because we don't have too many of them. But I think Trapattoni did utilise Cox as a forward in some games. I remember a couple of games with Robbie Keane where things just didn't come off for the two of them. They were trying flicks, and they all would have looked really good if they came off, but they didn't, and they just weren't effective at all. So, yeah, it's good to see him in form. He's definitely worthy of a shout in the upcoming friendly, because he is an in-form striker. But part of me thinks maybe he's had his shot with Ireland. Now, having said that, he's been played on the wing a lot, which wasn't his position, so he's probably worthy of another go. Just to quickly go back to Andy Reid, just if you're talking about other players that are certs on the Irish team, you probably have to say so is James McCarthy. And I just wonder, is there a little dilemma there that you'd never see I can't see a central pairing in midfield of Reid and McCarthy. It's just a little bit too small in stature. So would we see Reid in a kind of, as you say, advanced role behind maybe one striker, or are we going to play Reid behind and three in midfield? So these are things that we're going to have to suss out from O'Neill and Keane.
Indeed. And James, you know, David Myler has been playing some good stuff for Hull City this year. We never really seen him get the chance in the Irish squad before. He's a good big lad. There's no chance of him not having the physicality. A good big hurling lad, I might add. So he'd be certainly one now with his recent performances for Hull City. He'd be another one putting his hand up for selection.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would have said they'd want to see Gibson in there, but Gibson has been injured, he's been out a lot. Other people would say they don't want Gibson involved because of his attitude in the past. But besides all that, I don't see a partnership of something like Reid and McCarthy. I just think it's too small. Or even Houlihan, McCarthy in a big game, maybe if we were to draw someone like Germany again, Italy. I can't see the manager trying to build a team around that. I think he'll want some kind of steel in there. And as you say, Mailer, a big guy. I think Glenn Whelan, although he's playing an awful lot for Stoke this season, maybe has his chance passed. So there's definitely an opportunity for somebody to step in there, like Mailer, who's going to add a bit of toughness and strength in the middle.
Yeah, you mentioned Whelan, and to come to Joe on this one, a lot of Irish fans complained, and Glenn Whelan himself complained during the Trapattoni era about the style of play. But we've seen him at Stoke this year, and even though Mark Hughes is trying to play the sexy football and knock the ball about a bit, he has continuously relied on Glenn Whelan to bring the bit of grit that requires, and he's got a lot of Premier League football this season.
Yeah, I think... Whelan, I think, came into a lot of criticism because there was, the centre of the park was perceived as one of the weaknesses of the Trapattoni era, especially towards the end when they were being outnumbered by the opposition. And, you know, the first time it really happened was probably the home game against Russia, and it was something that we saw throughout the qualifying campaign, and obviously then in Poland as well, and it was continued on into the last campaign, the World Cup qualifiers, where it just seemed to be Whelan and one other, being passed by three centre midfielders in the opposition team. And then people started saying, you know, the 4-4-2 was dead and all the rest of it. But, Whelan seems to be a very different player in the Premier League under Stoke. I think his role is that he sits a little bit deeper. You know, he sits in front of the midfield, playing almost like an advanced sweeper position. You know, collecting the ball from midfield and maybe even shielding the back two before leaving it onto the centre midfielders playing in front of him. I would like to see him dropped. I've been a big fan of Glenn Whelan for a very long time now, ever since, you know, he started to break through on the scene at Manchester City. And he's worked his way up from the lower leagues with Sheffield Wednesday and then before moving on to Stoke and in the Championship. And then getting promoted into the Premier League, and he's always kept his position. So he's always kept his place in the team. I think if it was the case that a player with this, you know, he was dropped, you know, we're not really in a position where we can afford to drop a regular Premier League player at all. No matter how much he seems to be disliked, I think it just might just be a case of we need to make the best use of his talents. Maybe play him in a slightly different role. And you were talking there about playing Andy Reid as an advanced midfielder or as a withdrawn striker or a false nine or whatever they've been called these days. You know, I think it's possible that we could see Whelan sitting a little bit deeper and maybe allowing James McCarthy to push forward. I mean, when he first came into the Ireland side, when Whelan first came into the Ireland side, he was doing that for Stephen Reid, allowing him to push forward from central midfield. And I thought, you know, that could have been the central midfield partnership, you know, for the following seasons. But unfortunately, you know, Stephen Reid's just his injury history didn't allow that. But it could now be a case that, you know, with James McCarthy's growing maturity and just the confidence that we see in him every week for Everton, that he could play that kind of role for Ireland.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people will agree with you there. He certainly could. James, just before we leave the squad selection, do you think we're going to get any surprises in there? I know earlier on the programme, we've thrown a few names out there like Jack Grealish, Eunan O'Kane. There's a couple of others, Sean Murray, Callum Riley, a few other lads that are playing kind of regular football. Are we expecting any surprises here?
I would think possibly not for this game against Serbia, Dave. I think the management team have been doing the rounds of the in England and looking at our more established players in essentially. I think for this game it'll be along those lines, with something like building the team around Reece, seeing how McCarthy beds in. Coleman obviously is going to be in, but I think beyond this game we're looking at a friendly with Turkey at home in May. And if you remember at the start of the Trapattoni reign, he had that training camp in May, and infamously went well. Wes Hoolahan was involved in that, but
that
never again.
Yeah.
But I'd expect something similar to that. And there's talk of us taking a trip to the US, possibly one game, possibly two, a game with Italy penciled in, possibly in London. So I would think then that we might, well, I would hope then that we will see some of these players that we haven't seen before, like Grealish, get a chance in those kind of games. I don't think we'll see it in March, but I would like to see one or two surprise packages in this. I don't think naming a kind of a regular team that we've seen before, I think that might take some part out of it that we've seen since O'Neill and Keane were appointed. So something a little bit different, but at least if not in squad selection, then in the team selection.
Indeed it would. Now, the 23rd of February is a big date for Irish fans because it's the draw for the European Championship qualifiers. And James, we're second seeded. I seen when the pots were released, we're in pot two, but I found myself looking at pot three and thinking, well, there's a lot of countries in there that I feel we really would struggle with. Maybe one or two in pot four as well. This whole thing of two teams going through automatically with the third going to the playoff, it might be easy when you think about it, but when the teams are drawn, we might be in a pretty tough group by the end of it.
I did the exact same thing that I was looking at, obviously pot one, but straight away looking at pot three and pot four. And what struck me of those is quickly, like, pot three is Serbia, Turkey, Slovenia, Israel, Norway, Slovakia, Romania, Austria, Poland. They'll be immediately looking at pot two saying, we want the Republic of Ireland. We're probably the weakest, maybe along with Hungary, in the second pot. So we could get a real nightmare there. I think, like, Austria are in the pot below us. They'd have absolutely no fear of getting us again. Slovakia, who we had in the Euro qualifiers, Poland would probably think they could take us on. And again, to look down into pot four, Latvia have been improving quite a lot. Montenegro would be difficult. We probably wouldn't want Scotland, Wales. Although we consider ourselves better, there's potential for a real derby there. And Estonia are in there, Dave. And if you think we don't like the French after our playoff misery, the Estonians don't like us. They think they were robbed in our first leg away in Tallinn. So definitely potential for trouble. But what I would say is, with a new life in the Irish team, new management duo, no matter what qualifiers we go into, we think we can finish in the top two. And in the past, we've achieved it with McCarthy, gone into playoffs, achieved it with Trapattoni to go into a playoff. This time, if we get second, we qualify. So there's definitely incentive there to push on and improve on the last campaign, that's for sure.
Yeah, Joe, what do you make of that? Tough, we could get potential banana skins there, as Stan would say. However, as James was saying, we'll go in with, we have a new management team in place. They're going to be trying to pick the best team that we can put on paper. Surely they'll feel we could, if we can mount a challenge and not get trounced by a Germany or Spain or that, we have a real hope of qualifying automatically.
I definitely think so. I definitely think we're going to qualify. You know, with the new setup, that's the new qualification format that's there. You know, as a second seed, we're expected to finish second, and if we finish second, we'll qualify automatically. Even if we finish third, you know, as a good chance to get into the playoffs. So I'd expect us to finish no lower than third anyway, and I'd expect us to finish second. Just looking at the pots that are there, you know, the out of the first pot, you know, we'd hope to avoid Germany again. I think obviously in Spain, I think of the teams you'd want to play, you know, perhaps Greece or Bosnia Herzegovina. I don't think we'd really another trip to Russia. Part three actually, I think, is a lot, as you're saying, a lot more difficult than you might think, with some really strong sides there: Serbia, Turkey, Slovakia, Romania, Israel.
Not an easy place to go, as we've learned before.
No, Israel have a fantastic home record over the last few qualifying campaigns. Perhaps maybe not as strong away from home, but you know, just a very tough place to go and get a result. Even down to pot four, you know, we've teams like Armenia, who we've seen are improving. You know, Scotland did very well in the latter part of their last qualifying campaign, getting results against Croatia, which obviously was beyond us. You know, even teams like Bulgaria, who could be unpredictable and always capable of taking a shock. You know, even down into pot five, you know, we've Iceland, who are in the playoffs for the last World Cup. For the last set of playoffs for the World Cup final in the summer, you're not really sure what's going to happen against that kind of a team. And then we've complete unknown in Gibraltar right down in pot six.
In pot six, yeah.
In their first appearance. I think, you know, it'd be an interesting question to ask the management side, whether they'd like to be one of the pots with, or one of the groups with six teams, or would they prefer to be in a five-team group and also have the prospect of playing France two friendlies during the qualifying series, which is something that's been added in by Platini to this qualifiers, because France obviously as hosts have already qualified. It can be hard to find teams to play against, while the qualifiers are on for a host team. So whatever group finishes with five teams, they'll have that extra card of playing the future hosts twice over the course of the qualifiers. It'll be an interesting, an interesting game, an interesting friendly to see. Do you want to go back to Paris, to the scene of the crime, as they say? Or how kind of welcome would they get in Dublin in the Aviva Stadium?
Indeed, it would be very interesting to see a huge, huge draw coming up on the 23rd of February. Ireland in pot two. A lot of teams in. Have a look at pot three and tweet us on @talkingsport.org what team in pot three you feel that Ireland could beat comprehensively. A lot of tricky away games, that's for sure. Just before we go, lads, James, I'll come to you on this one. The League of Ireland season is not quite yet underway, but the preparations are in place. Teams are doing their having pre-season games. A lot of players are going left, right and centre. Roddy Collins is in Derry. Shamrock Rovers have two teams for the first time. It's quite exciting, and from a Shamrock Rovers point of view, I think it's the first time in Irish soccer where we've had a club that has such a strength in depth that they can field a second team in the first division. Is it fair to say that it just goes to show what can be done if you get your academy in order?
Well, that's one argument, Dave, but I know some people within League of Ireland have said it's giving Rovers an unfair advantage. My own personal view is that it lessens the first division a little bit. I don't think it's particularly innovative or does anything to shake up the league in terms of excitement. There might be a little bit of optimism if you're a first division club to have a Rovers coming down to you to play you two or three times a season. In terms of the top division, I think a lot has been made about Keith Fahey's return to the League of Ireland. And I think that is a good thing in terms of marketing the league. What I would say, Dave, is there hasn't been a hell of a lot of marketing, and we're not too far away from it. It just seems every time this time of year rolls around, the league just kind of gets going on it off its own steam without much fanfare about it. There's still time for us to see an improvement in that regard. What I would say also is that Martin O'Neill has expressed a desire to go and see games, and got a Serbia friendly coming up in those training camps, as I mentioned before. So I hope he does get out and see games, and if players merit it, the likes of Fahey, there's even talks of someone like Stephen MacPhail going to Shamrock Rovers. I hope he does get out and see games, and if players merit it, then at least include them in a training camp. That might do more marketing for the League of Ireland than anything we've seen so far in the run-up to the new season.
Yeah, that's for sure. And Joe, we've seen a lot of League of Ireland clubs have been busy with buying players, and James mentioned Keith Fahey back where he belongs, as a lot of people would say. Sligo are starting a 500 grand development project. Your own team, Limerick, will be looking to continue the success that they have had. They had a lot of good performances down in Thomond Park. Galway, back where they belong, at the top table. They'll be in Division 1 this year. It's great for the league to see a lot of teams, with points to prove as well, Pity about the Setanta Cup as well, though, the fact that we don't have the two big Belfast clubs. They've opted out of it, but there's a lot of positives for 2014, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, the league has been improving over the last few seasons steadily. Obviously we had Shamrock Rovers playing in the Europa League, and I'd like to think that their academy side or their B team appearing in the first division now is a product of that, the money that they earned invested in their setup there, and this is one of the fruits of that labor. I think as well as that, we've had players from the league over to England and been success and on into the senior team. And I think that the next logical next step you'd see from that is a League of Ireland player as a regular in the senior international setup, which again, I think Martin O'Neill and Keane have both said that, they're going to attend games in the League of Ireland. You know, they're going to see what talent is available. You know, again, maybe not in the Serbia friendly, but you know, this training camp that's been mooted for May and the end of season friendlies, you'd hope to see one of the top players in the league given that boost into the international setup. I think what the season holds for Limerick, I think, is consolidation of their position in the Premier League. I think, you know, it's another season in Tolman Park, and hopefully the Marcus Field will be ready next season for club football. And obviously, that's going to be a massive boost to the club to have their traditional home. Playing games with their traditional home. I think they've signed Shane Duggan from Cork City. He's a Limerick native. He's actually from. He grew up about 10 doors down from me at home when he was a kid. His brother was a year ahead of me in school. So it's good to see him involved again with football in Limerick. I'm really looking forward to the new season.
It's going to be exciting stuff. It really is. Well, I know I said at the start of the programme, lads, that it was going to be a small show, but once you get me talking about Irish soccer, I just can't stop. So apologies for running over. But my thanks to James Carew, Joe McCarthy and John Rogers for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. We'll do it all again very, very soon, closer to the cracking friendly between Ireland and Serbia at the Aviva Stadium, Lansdowne Road. It's going to be interesting. Now, we'll leave you with that fantastic song by John Rogers for Wes Houlihan. It's highlighting Wes Houlihan's bench frustration at Norwich City while also promoting and publicising the fantastic player that he really is. For myself, Dave O'Grady, have a very good evening.
Wesley Houlihan, a guy from the Irish waters, a tiny special man. He does what he wants. He moves from left to right. Extremes of a football genius. I hope that God exists for when Wes retires. Tormenting opposition midfield time after time. If he wasn't playing football, he'd be in a pantomime. Oh, sit down, oh, sit down, oh, sit down. Sit down next to Wes. Sit down, 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 down on the Norwich bench. If you're coming back from injury, sit down next to Wes. If your form is dipping sadly, sit down next to Wes. If your name is Ryan Bennett, sit down next to Wes. At Fulham and Spurs, both of the Manchester's sad, Liverpool, Stoke, Aston Villa's a joke. At Cardiff and Hull, Sunderland, Newcastle, at Swansea and Arsenal, he sits on his arsehole. Down, on the Norwich bench, Wes, sit down.